welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And if you missed out on the Saturday night special, don't you fret, because you can find it on my YouTube channel or my Facebook page. And it was amazing. Shane Hurricane Helms was on the show, and we had a hilarious time. He told so many crazy, funny stories, and he rocked out with us during the Nazareth sing-along. He reappeared with his mask on. It was great. So we had an amazing time with the Hurricane. So check that out, the Saturday night special. And we're going to do it all over again this weekend, except we're going to do it with the guys in Quarantine. If you haven't heard, it's my new Kiss covers band. But here's the thing. We only play 80s Kiss, and only 80s Kiss that was involving Bruce Kulick. So we really got our demographic down tight on that. But we're going to talk all about it. It's an ipso facto supergroup. Our first single comes out on Friday. It's a cover of No, No, No from Crazy Nights. The whole band is going to join me Saturday night, 9 p.m. Eastern on Facebook Live and YouTube Live. Bass player PJ Farley, guitar player Joe McGinnis, drummer Kent Slusher is going to be there. And we're also going to be joined by our other band member, former KISS guitar player Bruce Kulick is going to be here. It's Quarantine featuring Bruce Kulick talking KISS and how this band started, and answering your questions on the Saturday night special, 9 p.m. Eastern on Facebook Live or YouTube. And Friday on Talk is Jericho, I'm going to debut our version of No, No, No from Crazy Nights. Like I said, it does debut on Friday on all social media platforms, Spotify, iTunes, Apple, et cetera. And the video is actually going to debut on Spin Magazine at spin.com. So lots of great stuff coming up. Keep your eyes on the money. Keep your eyes on my Instagram, and keep your eyes on another Bruce, not Bruce Kulick, Bruce Jingles. He's the comedian from the Jericho Cruise Part Deux, who was so popular, they had to turn people away from his stand-up show on the second night of the cruise, and he was voted one of the top new acts, talent that people discovered, thought it was just amazing on the Jericho Cruise. It's Bruce Jingles. His shows were jam-packed. He couldn't fit in everybody who wanted to see him. He's on Talk is Jericho today to talk about how he got into comedy, going to junior high with Ice Cube, and learning from comedians like Dave Chappelle and Richard Pryor. Bruce is also talking about Bill Cosby and what he knew about Bill's behavior years before Bill was arrested for it. But there's something's going on, obviously, with the ridiculousness of the COVID virus and all of the great comedians who are basically out of work. Bruce Jingles is one of them. Bruce has started up a GoFundMe page. If you're on the Jericho Cruise, he's asking, if you saw him on the Jericho Cruise, to please do what you can to help Bruce out. If you want to donate a little something for Bruce and his amazing talents, just go to Bruce Jingles' Facebook page. That's facebook.com/Bruce.Jingles. And you'll see it right on the front page. Actually, he's done very well, raising much more than he asked for, but he deserves it. He's hilarious. Good friend of mine. He really killed it on the Jericho Cruise. And hopefully, hint, hint, we'll see him again on another Jericho Cruise. But in the meantime, in between time, he's right here on Talk is Jericho, the comedic stylings of Mr. Bruce Jingles. All right. So we always get surveys done after the cruise. And one of the questions of the survey is, who did you discover on the cruise? Like, who did you enjoy that you had never heard of? And on the list this year was Bruce Jingles.
Oh, really?
And there's only a list of like 18. No, there's only a list of four. So to be included was a pretty big deal. And it's great because you were a guy that was recommended to me by like five other guys.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just, if you're this Bruce Jingles, and if I was like, call him and let's get him on the cruise already, because I'm sick of hearing people talk about him.
Waiters and everything are coming up to you
on the street, and newsboys, hey.
Homeless people, hey man, get that Bruce Jingles. He's a good, funny, colored guy.
Because most homeless people are like old guys that sound like Jimmy Cagney.
I guess because I'm old.
But what a great time we had.
It was like summer camp. It was the greatest experience of my life.
Yeah, well, really, so explain.
You know what? Seeing people that were on the cruise after the cruise, it's like, hey, how you doing? And then you hug, and then it's back. You're back on the cruise.
Right, right, right.
You know what I mean? It was because it was just camaraderie. No, there was no BS. There was debauchery, yes, but I mean, there wasn't any fights or anything. I thought Booker T was going to kill somebody, but
what happened?
I guess some wrestling reporter was in the artist lounge.
Oh,
and Booker walked in. I know you ain't on this cruise, dog. You got me f***ed up, dog. Like, he was pissed.
Wow. Like, was it Dave Meltzer that he saw?
Yeah, 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 yeah,
Yeah. Dave's one of those guys very polarizing that he's a wrestling, I guess, kind of the
wrestling observer.
The Jedi, whatever. Yeah, the wrestling kind of prognosticator. And some guys take great offense to him. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, and Booker was heated. Now, people don't realize how big of a man Booker is.
Yes, he's deceptively tall.
Yeah.
I mean, legit 6'4".
Yeah, no, dude, he's got to be.
Maybe taller.
He's taller than me. I'm 6'4".
Right.
And he's, like, taller and way bigger. And yeah. It's like, oh, you know what I mean? So when you see him that lit, that pissed off, and Sherman, and his wife just went, and she walked away. and I just started laughing because I was like, oh, I know this brother's about to go off.
So did you have an idea what to expect to go on the cruise?
I kind of did.
Yeah?
Because I followed the first one. And I saw, and I would hit up Bert Kreischer, or I hit up Brad, you know, just
that's
out.
Bert Kreischer, that sounds familiar.
Didn't you have Bert Kreischer on your cruise?
No.
He was on, Bert Kreischer is a comedian, okay. Bearded comedian.
Oh, he's the guy that wears no shirt? Or
yes.
Something? That's the guy.
Yes,
yeah, yeah.
Yes.
Like Red Cup Jeff?
Yes. The tall midget. No offense to any
no offense to any tall midgets out there.
Any little people. You're not all not little people. You're big to me. But Jeff. But, oh my God!
Like you said, that
inside
was
joke.
Part of the Red Cup's becoming a celebrity. I'm gonna have to have him talk as Jericho one of these points in time. But that was one of the things I wanted to do on the cruise was because. I mean, there's quite a few different cruises out there,
mm-hmm.
but the one thing that I have on mind that no one else has is Chris Jericho.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I also want to kind of create my own stars with Red Cup Jeff and, you know, my dad, Ted Irvin, and like Bruce Jingles even, you know?
Dude, that was so awesome. How's your dad doing?
He's good, man.
That's my dude. Yeah. Dude. Yeah, that's what's up.
Yeah, he said, you white people are crazy.
you need Jesus. Because you had the Jericho on the cruise is Fortress of Solitude.
Yeah,
Up on top, you know, the Haven. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what it was called, right?
Yeah, Haven, yeah.
And it's so awesome. And you just sit up there and, you know, they have the people that work on the cruise constantly at the grill. And you're getting drunk and you could just order whatever the hell you want. And it just goes right on the grill. Like lamb shank, you know, pork chops. Cornflakes.
And you were up there every day.
Oh, dude, because it was cool because it was inviting.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't feel like I was interloping. I hope I wasn't interloping.
No, absolutely. You, like you said, because there's such anybody that was up and wanting to have fun and party and hang out was up there.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a real great scene of, you know, Fluffy's up there hanging out with his whole crew and mm-hmm. Some bands are up there and all my friends are up there. So it really was, like you said, summer camp. What a great analogy.
Yeah, you know, it was. You know, I'm hanging out with your dad. You know, I'm feel like a member of the family because I'm hanging out with your dad, your son, your mom, you know, your brother-in-law, your cousins, mm-hmm. I forget the two guys.
Chad and Todd.
Yeah.
Right now, people are going, what the hell are you talking about? But trust me, it was all fun stuff.
It was hilarious.
Cruise, right? Yeah, yeah. How did your sets go over on the show?
Amazing. The first one, you don't realize how big those ships are
mm-hmm.
until you get on it. You know what I mean? I know it's not the Minnow or, you know, or anything, but you don't realize. The rooms they have in there.
Yeah.
Like the theater was like 3,000.
Yep.
3,000 people. So the first night was 700, which is small to a 3,000 seater. You know what I'm saying? But it was still a lot of
people. Still a hell of a crowd, yeah.
Still a hell of a crowd. And that was great. And then the second one was the one that had the most, that it was my show.
Mm-hmm.
And that had three, that they had to turn away people.
From the Stardust?
Yeah,
really?
From the Stardust, yeah.
Wow.
It was the word spread, I guess, that fast. Mm. And, I mean, you have nothing better to do than talk about the big black comedian. but the word spread, so even Fluffy almost got turned away from coming to see my show. And then and got a standing O, and it was great because all the wrestlers were in the front. I mean, you had to, hey, I had stuff to do. It was your cruise, but everybody else was there, like Jake the Snake, Booker T, MVP, and the list goes on, and they gave me a standing O, and the whole place gave me a standing O, and then the third show was Fluffy's show, which was weird because he hosted, and I closed it, and so that was the fact that he gave me the nod to close his show meant a lot.
That's pretty cool, right?
Yeah.
Now, did you know him from before?
Yeah, I knew him. I knew him previously. I've known him for a long time. Him and his opener, Alfred.
It seems like, I mean, the L.A. comedy scene, but it's very close knit. Like, you came in, Brian Posehn just left, and they were talking about Sarah just having her baby, and Sarah Tiano was going to be on the cruise, but she got pregnant. And then, you know, Kate Quigley. And is it kind of a small scene?
It's,
big scene.
It's a huge scene, but the people that you respect that are constantly working and that aren't bitching on Facebook about why they didn't get the gig,
right?
Or complain about other comics, why did they get the gig and then get out there and get theirs, whatever possible way, we stick together.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, Sarah and I, we were on a Showtime special together. It was a sketch comedy show that piloted. That's how I got one of my first credits.
Okay.
So I've always respected her. Mm. We've respected each other for a long time. Kate, I've known for a long time, so I have a lot of respect for them. Before I was doing stand-up, Brian Fosen was one of the comics I respected, not only because of his comedy, but also the fact that he reads comic books. You always see him at Comic-Con.
Mm-hmm.
He's in the metal, that he's in, you know, he's in the performance side of entertainment. Like, if I can talk to him about Guar or something, Green Jell-O or something like that. And a lot of people wouldn't know that.
Right. And they had to change the name to Green Jell-O.
Green Jell-O, exactly, because Cosby sued them. No. But they took the name Jell-O.
That's your second imitation of the show. Are you a big imitation guy?
Not really.
Okay.
Not really. It's something I hold back on stage. I think most impressionists stay in that impressionist thing.
Okay. It's kind of the one trick
pony. That's the one trick pony. Yeah. Like, you're just known as as an impressionist.
Mm-hmm.
You're not known as, for your comedy, you're not known as being witty, because I don't think doing impressions are
throw it in there when it's...
Because it's unexpected.
It's unexpected, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's what comedy should be.
Interesting. Yeah. Comedy should be unexpected.
Yeah.
How do you mean?
You know, it's a joke you don't see coming.
Hmm.
If you see it, usually with comedy, if you see the joke coming, it's not funny.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? If you see a movie, if you watch, like, for instance, you watch a movie and you know exactly what's going to happen. This next scene, this next scene, this next scene, this next scene, this next scene. There's no twists, no turns, no anything. Then it's boring.
Right.
Then you go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with comedy, it's like, oh, I didn't see that. I didn't see this. No, good comedy is a roller coaster.
So who's an example of some comedians that you like that utilize that?
I think Chappelle is the greatest of all time.
Mm.
Not just the fact that I've had the chance to work with him and he knows who I am. And that was amazing to me. Did you watch his latest special?
I haven't seen the most recent one.
Okay. That's his masterpiece, in my opinion.
Really?
And
all the stuff he's done?
Yeah. Because his body, because that's what makes him, in my opinion, a greater. Now, I'm not denouncing Pryor because he was originally the greatest to me. I think Chappelle is greater because he has a greater body of work, and he didn't just go to film like Pryor did.
Mm.
It was constantly working.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like when he stopped doing Chappelle's show, people said, "Whatever happened? What happened to Chappelle? He still existed." You know, he was going back and forth, East Coast, West Coast, to comedy clubs, working. And that's how come you can come out after 10 years absence from the public eye, come out with 3 back-to-back specials.
Right.
You know, like pow, pow, pow. And they're some of the greatest specials of all time.
And that's kind of what the goal is for a comedian. Obviously, you want the sitcom and the movies, but the special
mm-hmm.
is kind of the initial breakthrough, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what I'm hoping to do. I'm looking for, basically, on June 13th, I'm hoping to shoot my hour special.
Okay.
It's going to cost me $50,000, but I'm going to figure out how to do this because it's also my 50th birthday.
Okay.
So I know my fans would come to that. If I posted, hey, I'm filming my hour special for Netflix, come to, you know, it's my 50th birthday, everybody's going to show up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I just know that. you know, come celebrate my 50th birthday with me. How often do 50-year-olds,
right,
people turning 50, record their hour special?
Their first special.
Yeah.
So how does it work? So what is the 50 grand spent
for the production
on?
Company.
Okay.
The production company, the filming, the equipment, the manpower, the boom. The booms are those booms are expensive as hell.
It's freaking booms, man.
Those damn booms. But just to have it quality, I think if you've watched, you don't have time yourself. But if you watch the latest of what Trim or what Netflix or any other streaming service is churning out, they're just churning out content, so they're taking anything.
Mm-hmm.
I think the term special is over exaggerated. Nothing really special about some of the stuff I've seen. And no offense, I'm not naming names or anything. I'm just saying some of the stuff I'm not too impressed with. And I think, but now is the time where everybody gets a chance.
Mm.
If you have your own vehicle, per se.
Right.
Because Hollywood's not looking for you. Hollywood's not going to come out to Ontario, California, where I live, or, looking for you. You have to have something to bring to them. So having said that, I want to have something put together, already done, edited, shot, format, everything. And just say, here you go.
And so that's what you do. You put it together, edit it, and then sell it afterwards?
Yes.
Right.
And then sell it for content. And if they know what they're doing, they're going to watch it, go, oh God, he is funny.
Hmm.
You know, he has a different view. He's not a low-budget Chappelle, or he's not, you know, because a lot of people that aren't in the know, through all comparisons, why am I a low-budget Chappelle? Because I'm intelligent.
Well, because you're black?
Yeah.
Right?
You know? I think that pigeonholes you.
So let's talk about when and how you got started in comedy, Bruce. Before we do that, let me take a minute to thank RockAuto.com. RockAuto.com is the place to go if you need car parts because they offer the same low prices for do-it-yourself mechanics like a lot of you guys listening and for professional mechanics. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest price possible. And their site is so easy to use. You don't need a membership or an account login. Just go to rockauto.com, choose the make, model, and year of your car or truck, and then find the part you need. It's as easy as that. Rockauto.com is a family business that's been serving auto parts customers for 20 years. They've got everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and windshield wipers. You can get everything you need in a few easy clicks and then have it delivered right to your door. Go to rockauto.com right now to see all the parts available for your car or your truck, and then check out their low prices. And be sure to type in Jericho in their How Did You Hear About Us box so that they know I sent you. That's me, Jericho. I sent you. Rockauto.com, amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car or truck will ever need. And remember to let them know that I sent you by typing Jericho in the How Did You Hear About Us box. Rockauto.com. Take care of your car or truck without breaking your bank today. So when you're talking about your 50th birthdays coming up and doing your first special, have you been a comedian since you were young?
It's my 20th year.
Okay.
So it's a lot going into it, like my 50th birthday and my 20th year. Because I was on two specials before, but I wasn't the star of the specials. I was the second banana, but that helped me get to where I was. So I left from being underneath that comic who I used to open for that had the specials, and then did it myself.
So what made you get into stand-up comedy at 30 years old?
I had to do the drugs first. I had to build up a tolerance. fear. You know what I mean?
Fear made you try it, or fear kept you from trying?
Both.
Gotcha.
Both. Fear to try it because I had nothing else at that time.
Mm.
I was in a low place in my life.
Gotcha.
Fear of, I call it fear of failure. The other fear, what if you try it and it works? Then what are you going to do after that?
Right.
You know? But after my best friend, who we weren't talking at the time, dared me, said, well, you want to do this? Why don't you try it on open mic? We've been talking about it all these years. Why don't you get off your ass and do it? And I did it. And I entered an open mic contest at the Ontario Improv, where I live, and it had just opened. And I entered the contest. I won the contest, went to the semifinals, and won that. And I thought, oh, shit might work.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and that was the first and second time I had done it. I mean, I spoke publicly before. I'm not scared of speaking
right
in front
out
of
the gate. You were successful at it.
Yeah.
Because you mentioned, and not to get too deep, but it seems like a lot of comedians have issues from the past. Is that where the comedy comes from?
The darkness.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
Like people talk about clean comics all the time. Oh, we refer to clean comics. Well, Bill Cosby was the cleanest comic. You know what I mean? So I think, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. I think just because you're clean in performance doesn't make you clean in life.
Mm-hmm.
You're clean in performance because you know what not to say.
Right. Right.
You know? So I try to be, with me, I try to be myself. I know what not to say. I know in certain situations I can be clean, but the rest of the time I can be myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I'm not going to do major, like a corporate gig. You know, I could if I just edited it out, but
right.
I'm not going to do a Chuck E. Cheese party, depending on the parent.
Right, of course. So where did you kind of derive your style of comedy from?
Prior, Carlin, I like the comics that talk to the audience like we're talking.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Situational.
Yeah. They're not talking, they're not preachy. They're talking like it's just a couple of cats in a bar sitting there, and that's the comedy I like because that way is more personal to each and every individual that sees the show.
When I did Groundlings, one of the rules that you learn is don't try and be funny.
Yeah.
When you try and be funny,
you just do it.
It's not funny.
Yeah.
It's when you're committing and just like you said, just talking and figuring out which way you want to go with it. That's where the humor lies by the straightness of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's kind of the Yoda mentality. There is no try, do.
Yeah, right.
Because then that's what I tell young comics. Like a lot of young comics think I'm an ass because I tell them, well, don't F up. You know, if they're gonna, like, you know, before they're set.
Yeah.
That's not telling them not to. That I'm wishing them a bad set. That just don't F up.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you gotta do.
That's the rule.
Yeah. That's what you're going to do. Don't screw up.
When you did your open mics and you did good right off the gate, did you have somebody that kind of helped you, mentored you a bit?
Mm-hmm. I had a few comics that saw me and like, oh, God, he's... Because they would always say I had a good, great stage presence. Or my look was deceiving, which is kind of a backhanded compliment.
How do you mean?
That I didn't look like I'd be that smart. Like, what the hell are you talking about? I did have people, because I would always watch. I believe in watching, sitting and watching, and learning, and just keeping your ears open and your mouth shut. So when I started, I was doing like 3 sets a night at open mics all over L.A. Like, I was going all the way from, I was coming from on where I lived all the way to L.A. and doing 3, because at that time, every place had an open mic. Because then comedy was going through its renaissance to where everybody wanted to be a comic, just like it's going through now.
Right.
So I was hitting as many open mics as I can per night. So each time I did it, I got stronger. So I had to make sure I did 3-4 sets a night or 4 sets a week,
mm-hmm.
which I sacrificed because then I didn't have time for my other friends. I didn't have time for women. I didn't have time for this or that. I was screwing up my job because I was coming home at 3:30 in the morning to get up at 5 to come all the way back out here to work at a job that I hated. And, you know, it's sacrifice.
Right.
And that's what I think. You know what I'm talking about. If you believe that you can do something, that you should be doing something, you go all balls deep and just go.
Yeah,
just get into it. And that's how you learn. That's how you become stronger. You can tell, like, in comedy, a lot of comedians say they've done it for 15 years, but you see about 7 years worth of work.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because they haven't worked consistently.
Mm-hmm. So are you working, like, every weekend somewhere?
I'm trying to.
Okay,
I'm trying
gotcha.
To. So, like, the longest gap I have is, like, a week where I'm not doing a set anywhere.
Is that all across the states?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
But, but a lot of times, because I don't have management. So I'm jumping for management now. So I've done everything I've done pretty much myself.
Mm.
So you constantly, with me, I'm constantly looking for the next gig. Because you're only as good as your next gig.
Right.
you know, that was great when I come off your cruise. You're searching for that next gig. You're searching for how to survive. And luckily, I have the benefit. I live with my mom. She believes in what I've done.
Right.
So that makes it a lot more convenient for me. Now, but also in comedy, comedy breaks off into other things too. Like, am I going to do a host podcast, or am I going to host award shows, or am I going to become an actor, or am I going to break off into voiceover, which I'm interested in doing. And you establish a lot of good relationships.
Well, that's what I said when I had all these different people before the cruise telling me about you.
Mm-hmm.
Had they come and seen you, or mm-hmm. you were friends with them, or
yeah, and everybody that recommended me, I know personally, and because I've always been a wrestling fan. It's weird how comedy got me into the things I love. Like I've always grown up a wrestling fan. I've always grown up a comic book nerd.
Uh-huh.
But now I'm hanging out with the wrestlers I admired, and hanging out with the comic book creators that inspired me. You know what I mean? So the comedy brought that on. Social media helped. That helped a lot. And I just showed these individuals the respect, and now they respect me for what I do. Like there's like Booker T, you guys respect me as a comic because you know I'm funny. Because I do what I was supposed to do.
Right.
And of course I respect you guys for what you do. So it's a mutual respect. So that's when it's different than someone just using coattails or riding coattails like that.
So your name itself is very unique, Bruce Jingles. That's real. It actually is Bruce Jingles. I want to talk about that because it is your legit name. But before we hear that story, I got to give props to another Talk is Jericho sponsor who's doing their part to help during the coronavirus pandemic, and that's Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home today is so much more than it was yesterday, but at Rocket Mortgage, home is still all about you. During these challenging times we're all experiencing, the top priority at Rocket Mortgage is the health and safety of the communities they serve. And while things are changing quickly every day, one thing that will never change is their team's commitment to giving you the best mortgage experience possible. And that's why if you need mortgage support, their team of experts is there to answer questions and offer solutions. They understand that hardships happen. They're here to help. And whether that means working with you to save money on your mortgage or finding a new way to navigate payments, if you have questions, the team at Rocket Mortgage has answers. They know how important your home is to you because you are important to them. If you need mortgage assistance, the home loan experts at Rocket Mortgage are available to help 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from their home to yours. The team at Rocket Mortgage is with you. Visit rocketmortgage.com/Jericho to learn more. That's rocketmortgage.com/Jericho. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org number 3030. When your name was suggested, your name itself.
Mm-hmm.
What an interesting name. Bruce Jingles. Not hard to forget that.
Yeah, and that's my real name.
That's your real name.
Uh-huh.
I've never heard of the Jingles family.
Well, okay. Well, my great-great-grandfather was a freed slave.
Really?
Yeah. And he had the option, at that time, during slavery, if you're freed, you had the option of taking your former master's surname, which would have been Edwards.
Right.
Or coming up with your own name. And he chose Jingles because he thought it sounded like he had money in his pocket, which is not just a blessing, but it's also a curse because we've been broke ever since. So you grow up with, if you have to grow up with that last name in South Central Los Angeles during the 70s, you better come up with a sense of humor. And then you go to the school, but your parents don't let you go to school in South Central. They made you go to school in the San Fernando Valley where you had a better chance of getting a better education.
Oh, wow.
And that's where you go. I went to junior high school with Ice Cube.
Really?
Yeah. He was the teacher's assistant in my art class.
No kidding.
Yeah. And it was weird because I remember, because I wanted to be a comic book artist. And I still I'm kind of getting back into it. I have a problem with my hands. A lot of jerking off. No, just kidding. Carpal tunnel was really bad. But I'm getting back into art. And I remember Ice Cube would say, or O'Shea as I knew him, It's like, hey, what's that? And I go, oh, I want to be a comic book artist. He's all right, right? And I go, see him writing lyrics. I go, what's that? He's all, it's my rap. Good luck with that.
Yeah, he did pretty good with that.
Yeah, now I'm who's still in with their mom. So,
a lot of your act too. I remember when Mark and I, my partner, were kind of scouting you and see what it was. You do a lot of weed humor, shall mm-hmm. we say? What's the mindset and the idea from that?
I don't want to be branded a weed comic, though.
Right. Is there such a thing, a weed comic?
Okay. Yeah. Yes, there are. I mean, if you start off with your stage name, and I hate stage names as far as comedy, because I think you're hiding yourself.
Okay.
If you start off with like Stoner Rob, and there is a Stoner Rob, or Bong Bill, or Weed Willie, or something, like, you're stuck. So you can't do that corporate gig, like for Ralston Perina or something like that. They're not gonna, you know, book you. You know,
Stoner Rob not getting a lot of gigs with
he's getting a lot of gigs, but he's just getting weed gigs, and weed audiences are stupid. And I'll say it. That's right, world. Yeah, weed audience is stupid because you can't try your smart humor because they're sitting up there looking with their mouth open. You know what I mean? And by the time when they're driving home, then they get it.
Right. You know, oh, I get it.
Yeah. So I can't hear that laugh because they're already.
Yeah.
You know, it's. I don't know.
But it's incorporated a little bit into your act, though.
Yeah, because I love weed.
Right.
Because I think in your act you have to. Talk about yourself. Because stand up like comedy is self deprecation. Mm. You have to talk about yourself for the people to like you. So that way they can relate to you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and they
can see the comparisons. So, of course, I like weed. I talk about weed. I like sex. I talk about sex. But I'm not a sex comic. I'm not Cosby. that's the third Cosby.
you're all over the Cosby today.
It's just disappointing.
Yeah. How'd you feel about that?
I was pissed.
Yeah.
I'd heard in the black comedy community, we kept everything in.
Yeah.
It was known that he was rapey.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing that there's a...
And, a word for that.
Yeah, an adverb for, like, you know, it's rapey.
Yeah.
It's, but we had known that. I'd learned about it. I had heard the rumors, and I opened for Mr. Paul Mooney. If you don't know who Paul Mooney is, if you ever watch Chappelle's show, he's Negro Damas. He's a legend in comedy. Right. I used to write for Richard Pryor.
Wow.
And that's how he got his, he writes. And, he told me, he's a homie. He basically said, oh, well, Cosby ain't gonna do nothing but drug them white women and rape them. And I went, huh? And this is when I'm opening for him. I'm featuring for him at the improv where I started, which is an honor. And now picture this, we're in the green room watching the OJ verdict. From OJ 2, this time we got him. yeah, and pardon me for saying this, but this is exactly what Mr. Mooney said. He goes, "Homie, they getting ready to put this nigga under the jail."
You know, and that's like, in it, under it, yeah,
yeah, just like no, yeah, getting rid of him, and that's where just conversation. And somebody mentioned Cosby, and that's when he said what he said about Cosby. I'm like, huh? And then getting more into it, what I tried to do was meet people that influenced me before comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So I was meeting more and more people that were making Mr. Mooney's claim legitimate. And then Hannibal Buress.
Yeah.
And I know Hannibal. he it's social media that did it. Just like social media destroyed Michael Rich's career.
Oh, from his rant.
Yeah, from his rant. Because somebody recorded, because that was at the heyday. That was at the beginning of camera phones. So now everybody had access to that. Was Michael Richards, is he racist? No, just stupid. Just not experienced as a comic to get out of that situation, to say what he said. So having said that, it was social media that fed into the Cosby thing. And now all of a sudden everything's trickling down. So People were, you know, you still have the people that still say he's innocent. Well, you know, 75 women say he's not.
Well, who's saying he's innocent? I mean, at this point, right?
There's some stupid people, you know.
But you have to watch. I mean, it's just the way of the world now. I mean, you said your 50th birthday's coming up. So is mine. But even for me, I've been in show business since I was 19. But from 1990 to, you know, 2000 is a completely different world than 2000 to now or 2005.
Yeah, the casting couch is gone.
Right, because you see what happened with Weinstein. I mean, he's going up the river, man.
No, dude.
You know, it's funny that he shows up in court with a walker.
No, dude. And look at when Cosby showed up in court. He had a cane, and he was acting blind. I go, am I right? I go, I was like, thinking to myself, my mom was right. You will go blind.
But that's the thing. Like, you have to be careful with what you're saying and what you're doing.
And what you do.
Yeah.
That just shows what power is. I mean, you know firsthand what that's like. And that's it. You know, that day is gone. Mm-hmm. But we can't forget the women that have done that too. It goes both ways.
Mm-hmm. How do you mean?
Like, the women, there are powerful women that have done that, that have Me Too'd men.
Right.
You know, so why don't we have He Too? Because I don't get the whole Me Too thing, first of all. I understand about the bad part. I get
it. Right.
See, I don't get the hashtag. Because growing up, we always called the hashtag the pound sign. So basically, they're saying pound me too. So I don't get that.
Is that from you?
Yeah, that's a little joker. Yeah, that's
perfect. But yeah, I mean, have you had to kind of change your act in any way?
No, I they know I'm coming from a kidding standpoint. I think if you say something like that, you have to back it up with, hey, I don't agree with it, but this. So you just explain your joke.
Is it a little different because you're black too?
Yeah.
Can you get away with a little bit more?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really because I can say the stuff that if someone else said it, it'd be racist.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and they're white comics that hate that. I remind them, well, you kind of set the pace for it to be that way. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's, I don't know. I say things not just for shock, but to just tell the truth because I don't give a shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I don't care. If truth hurts, so be it. That's why my penis is named The Truth. So
I think these little nuggets you're sewing in here.
Yeah, I got to. Yeah, it's like,
But that's the thing, though. Like, you know, if you're black, you can, you know, hit on black humor.
Mm-hmm.
I can be racist against Canadians
because
I'm a Canadian.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that Canadian racism is just running rampant nowadays. Someone's got to stop it.
I had a joke of, and then I found out another comic did it too. But I'm going to say it. I had a joke of, like, nobody really takes Canada seriously. You know, look at the national anthem. Oh, Canada.
Someone else stole it.
It's like, I don't say stole it. I don't think you know each other. And you have the same thought. Yeah, it's parallel thinking. So, you know,
it's this is such a cliched, ridiculous question, but where do you get your ideas for your material?
Everywhere.
Yeah.
They can just come out of nowhere. Hmm. Like I've had old jokes that what made them way better, which excelled them, was a simple comma. It's how you pacing.
Mm, in the delivery?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's simple, just a comma.
Timing, right?
Timing, yeah.
Yeah.
And it changes things. Whatever, you just stumble upon, I just stumble upon jokes just in my daily life. Mm. And I, that's funny, because I'm just honest about my daily life. And so I have a funny life. It's just weird. I know weird people, and I know everybody else knows weird people.
Yeah.
Like, you know Jeff. So Jeff, okay, let's explain Jeff.
Red Cup Jeff.
Okay, we had a signing. Can I tell that?
Yeah, please.
Okay. He had a signing on the cruise, right? So we're all, and it was like signing for me. I had autograph signing. So me, Gabriel, your dad, I was sitting next to your dad,
Is
hilarious. It was hilarious. And Jeff signed somebody's penis now.
What?
Yes. He signed an actual penis. Yes.
Whose penis did he sign?
I think your brother-in-law.
I think it was an area, like his lower abdominal area. Wasn't it exactly?
That was penis.
Actual penis was signed.
Actual, yes.
I know my dad was signing
his people, butt crackers.
People wanting their butt signed, so he would sign M. No, he said W and then W.
Yeah, wow.
If you stand on your head, it says mom.
Mom.
I was like, I love your dad. You told me that joke when I was like freaking 5 years old, Dad.
I love your dad, dude. Dad's awesome, dude. Give him a hug for me, dude.
I will for sure. I will for sure. So when you're putting together your routine, because I know on the cruise, like it's like 3 60-minute sets or 40-minute sets. How? I mean, that's a lot of material. That's a long set. We just went and saw Fluffy the other night in Tampa, and I mean, dude, sold out. You know, 6,000-seat arena, ridiculous, huge, popular. And he goes about 65, 70 minutes. Mm-hmm. It's all great stuff from beginning to end. But I'm thinking this is a long time to be funny.
Yeah, but look at there's other comics that do, like Ralphie. Ralphie would do, the late, great Ralphie May.
Yeah.
Would do 2.5-hour sets.
How do you do that?
Because you're belting everything out. Mm. Your thoughts. And that 2.5, you know, so you're belting it all out. Like Carlos Mencia does 2.5-hour sets.
But
you
that's
know,
all.
Not,
that's
not
all.
Most of his hits, but he's. Sorry, Ned. You're belting all this out because you're not going, because you're bigger than me. You know what I'm saying? You're not going to the open mics, the regular open mics, just popping in and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's what I have to do. You can go to an improv. And just bump somebody.
Yeah,
because you got to work on this. I got bumped by Chappelle when he was working on. Hey, Jingles, I got to bump you. I got a new special coming out. People ain't gonna like me. Brother, got to come out to paint. You know, like a lot of people don't know I can do a Chappelle.
That's
impression.
A good one.
Thank you. But that's where they work their stuff out. You know, at the club. So when they're doing weekends. They got control of it, so they can belt out all that shit. You know, boom, 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 boom. And Ralphie, it just amazed me. He would do, this guy's close to 600 pounds.
Is he that big?
He was that.
Wow.
Yeah. And he was, yeah. He lost when he had the stomach steak.
Yeah,
leg, The gastro bypass.
Yeah.
He lost 220 pounds.
That's me.
He lost a full-grown man.
He lost to Jericho.
Yeah, he lost to Jericho.
Yeah.
And gained back 300. How the hell did he break the lap band? And I told him that. He broke the lap band. Like, that lap band just snapped.
Damn.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And he gained back three. You know, and that's the comic. That's comic life. It's just like wrestler life. And mm-hmm. I think that's why wrestlers and comics, we get along so well. Because we do the road all the time. Because mm-hmm. we die the same. In hotel rooms,
or just
you're throwing yourself out there. If you're good, you're throwing yourself out there every night.
But like you said, too, there's some darkness there. Like,
the same darkness.
Once again, talking about Fluffy, we hung out after the show, and he texted me after. He's like, "Man, it was so much fun just hanging out after the show." Because you know, if people understand, it's lonely on the road.
Yes.
You know, if you don't have friends in town, you'd be performing in front of 5,000 people, and then you go back to your room and sit there.
Yeah, because you don't want to deal with.
Yeah,
and it's not that you don't want to deal with it. That's a lot to deal with. 5,000 people clamoring for you at once, and you know what I mean. So that's why a lot of comics. That's why a lot of people are standoffish. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that's the business we came in. So that's the double standard of the business. So during the road, it is lonely because I stay in the hotel room. And people always say, "Oh, you just go out and party and drink." Yeah, I do, but I drink at the club, and I go home.
Yeah,
and I go to the hotel. I crash, and there's no rape stories about Bruce Jingles because Bruce Jingles don't play that. And I just like to be by myself. I sleep on the road.
Mm.
That's where I get the best sleep because in L.A. I feel like I can't sleep and I shouldn't be sleeping. L.A. is constantly moving.
So you said you don't have any representation or anything like that. How are you booking gigs?
Emails.
Oh, yeah?
Word of mouth.
So you're your own booking agent?
Yeah. Emails, word of mouth.
Yeah.
Do
you have a list of, like, all the clubs and just email them all?
I just luck of the draw. Or you make your – they know who I am. So gigs – like, you can go – like, I've gone – like, before I got the gig on the cruise, I was, like, I was struggling, like, oh shit, next month, what the hell am I gonna do? And then boom, gigs just come out of nowhere. It's weird. I'm tired. I was talking to my friend Rob here. I was on the way. I'm tired of booking myself. I've done it for 20 years. Mm-hmm. And the last time I had representation was from another comic. And honestly, I cut that short because what's he going to do that I can't do? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? If there's going to be a great gig, he's going to book himself.
Of course.
You know, it's like a wrestler managing you.
Yeah, no, I get it. Yeah.
You know, it doesn't make any sense. That's why I believe in establishing relationships with other people like yourself and Mark and the other wrestlers and blah, 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 people that are established in their career because maybe something can connect to them.
Okay, so you've done comedy in Iraq as well, and you've had some really different experiences over there than I had when I was there with the WWE. I want to talk about that, but first, everyone listening, I want to tell you why you really need to check out Endurance Warranty. Endurance protects you from spending thousands of dollars when your car breaks down. Breakdowns do happen, and I know it sucks when they do, but Endurance can help it suck a little less. So protect yourself from potential repairs at endurancenow.com/Jericho. Endurance pays mechanics directly for parts and labor and cuts out the middleman. It was rated the number one vehicle protection company by Consumer Affairs and offers the best customer service in the industry today. And right now, new customers can get $300 off any Endurance vehicle protection plan. And for a limited time, all of their plans come with Endurance Elite Membership. The Elite Membership gives you 24/7 roadside assistance, a personal concierge, ID theft recovery, tire repair and replacement, and even key fob replacement. Plus, new customers will also get $500 in shopping vouchers to spend at grocery stores, restaurants, and online merchants. So if you got Endurance and your car breaks down, just give them a call and they'll handle all the rest. This is a great deal, guys. Protect your vehicles and your family finances during this pandemic. You don't need to spend extra money, and Endurance is going to take care of everything. Don't be burdened with the unexpected cost of car repair. For more information about Endurance's vehicle protection plans and how you can take advantage of their limited time relief program, go to endurancenow.com/Jericho. That's endurancenow.com/Jericho. Here's something too. You were smart to take the gig on the cruise, and you know, none of us are getting rich off it, but we are understanding the promotional benefit of it.
Yeah, because 5,000 people are on that damn.
And you had a whole year of me saying, "And Bruce Jingles is on the cruise. Bruce Jingles is on the cruise." So when you show up at a club, oh, I have heard of him.
Yeah,
he's doing the cruise. Because there's a lot of people. I don't need to say a name, but there's some people like their manager. Well, Fluffy's manager, for one. This is not the person I was going to talk to. Yeah. He's like, I don't know what he's making. I guarantee it's probably about 100 grand a show, 200 grand
exactly,
a show.
Exactly. Yeah, because he's the name on the
draw. Of course, yeah. And we had what I had for him, he probably wouldn't even roll over in bed for.
Yeah, exactly.
But he wanted to go on the cruise. He wanted to be a part of it. He likes the idea of it. And for what it's worth.
And he's a wrestling fan.
He's a wrestling fan. Yeah. And for what it's worth, there was a year of talking about Gabriel Iglesias and Fluffy and this and that and the other thing. Now, a lot of people know him, but a lot of people don't. And now there's a whole new world. So instead of just being so short-sighted, like his manager said, well, he can't go. And so I text him, like, hey, man, I heard you can't go. Thanks for – he's like, what do you mean I can't go? Who said that? I'm like, this guy? He goes, give me 5 minutes.
Yeah.
5 minutes later, Fluffy's going to go. I told him he's crazy, but there's a big
picture
here.
Because they think – because the average person thinks it's bullshit.
Right.
You know what I mean? And right. It's not.
Just looking at the number on the paper.
Yeah, exactly.
Not the stuff that you can't put a number beside.
Because that dude is trying to make money off him. Right. Because that's how he makes his money.
Right.
And I get it. Mm-hmm. They don't, sometimes you got to step back to go forward.
Yeah.
And that's what the cruise, maybe you're taking a step back from not what you don't normally get, mm-hmm. but you're also getting a trip to the Bahamas.
Right. Your name
is blasted.
It's around there.
Yeah, yeah. So you're gaining all these new fans. Like, I have wrestling fans. I legitimately have wrestling fans. I haven't even been in a match, thank God. But I have wrestling. It's crazy. Like, I go to signings because I am a fan. I went to an Angle signing a few weeks ago.
Kurt Angle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had people chanting for me when I walked in. And that was weird. And people that had been on the cruise. And this is L.A., you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it's a small world. Like, I get recognized on the street. Like, I've gone overseas to Iraq and performed for the troops.
Oh, right on. Yeah. Like a USO thing?
Yes, yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes, and I've talked to comics before. When I did it, like, there are comics that are like, what the hell are you doing that for? I go, because those are fans for life.
Mm-hmm.
Those are fans for
so
life.
So appreciative
yes.
that you went.
Yeah.
We went 3 times, 7, 8, and 9, and I still have people, hey, man, I was there. Or,
yeah.
That's dude. 11 years ago now.
Yeah, dude, I still get that, too.
Yeah.
Like, I did a club in El Paso 2 years ago, and I had 10 cats from a battalion that I met in Iraq come to the show.
Wow.
And they brought 30 people with them.
Yeah.
So that's 40, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And because I made so much of an impression on them.
How was that going over to Iraq and doing those shows?
Very amazing.
Yeah.
I cried one because we forget that we just don't know that they feel forgotten. And they are, because we have our daily lives. You know what I mean? But they feel forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
So to get a touch of home there is, whew.
Right.
So it's like, oh, thank God, I needed that. And this soldier came up to me, and he had tears in his eyes. He goes, thank you. He gives me a hug, and he gives me his lighter. And I never forget it. It was a military lighter.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's simple things like that. And he, I know he got injured, but he's okay now.
You know, it's something that I didn't realize is just how long those guys go over there for.
Yeah, and how small the world is.
And how do you mean?
And that in the complex I live in, there was a guy that I knew. I ran into somebody. I lived in the same apartment complex.
Over there. All right.
yeah, that's how small the world is.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
But you would see, like, you know, you would, you know, I've done signings at, like, military bases for, like, my books and stuff because they have their own, you know, canteen, whatever it's called. And you'd see kids that their dads hadn't even seen them yet.
Yeah.
Because they go there for, you know, 12 months, 18 months, whatever the hell it is. And here's a, you know.
It's a stranger coming home calling me dad.
Yeah, 19 months.
Calling me son.
Kid. I haven't seen him yet or whatever. You know, it's really, so to see that. What did you feel like when you were over there in the war conditions, so to speak?
I was over the wire a lot. Over the wire is when you're in action.
Yep. Outside the wire.
Yeah, outside. Yeah, and when you go over there, you find out that your ranking in the military is like a lieutenant.
Just as a civilian.
Just as a civilian, you're like a lieutenant.
Really?
And they give you in some cases you had to carry a sidearm. That's how. Yeah.
So, I never had that.
You know, you had military. You were a larger group.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? That was only a couple of times that happened.
Mm.
So we were going, like in Iraq, we were going from different to different bases. Some would be camps, like literal camps, like tents, boom, you know, in the dirt and everything. And then some would be Solomon's palaces, like these palatial. Yeah. Palaces with gold toilets.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We stayed in one of those.
Yeah, wasn't it weird?
It was weird because there was a big, I guess, like a compound of them with a big like lake in the middle of it.
Yeah,
that was.
And it had three-eyed fish. Did you see those fish?
Oh, it's terrible.
These like in the Baghdad. And now you went to the palace in Baghdad, yeah. Right? Now, when in the palace in Baghdad, when you come from outside the wire, they fly you in a Black Hawk, which is awesome. And then, you know, so you're thinking I'm having Blue Thunder flashbacks and stuff like that.
Roy Scheider like a motherfucker.
Jamf. just another f***ing observer. Jaffo.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, just another snafu, right?
Yeah, no, Jaffo.
Oh, just Jaffo. That's Jaffo. A Jaffo. Yeah, just that's another right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's obscure.
And that was Warren Oates' last movie.
Was it really?
Yeah, that was the senior dude on to Roy Scheider.
Okay.
That got killed.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
Okay,
yeah. And Jaffo.
Yeah. And he was in The Wild Bunch. Okay, but just look.
So you're talking about the three fish?
Yeah, because there's these huge mutant carp in the. Because
the lake is so polluted, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's a moat.
Yeah.
It's basically a moat. And these three-eyed fish, like, it was like Springfield. It was like.
And they told us to stay out of it, obviously, and lo and behold,
fish
went in. Jeff Hardy went swimming in it.
Well, because he's daring.
Yeah, that's why he has green hair. That's not a dye. It's real.
Like that's what happened.
The three-eyed fish. I remember that.
It was crazy. And then they come up like, and then like, oh, like you saw, like,
yeah,
what?
Like a womb.
And they tell you, they have to tell you not to get in the water.
Right.
I know not to get in the water if I just say, boom. And like, like, do I look like Jonah?
So as we start to wind down here, so you're talking about your comedy special and selling, is that how you start going to the next level now?
Yeah. Because I feel that enough of the big, everybody knows me. All the big wigs know me. They're, hey, Jingles. Yeah. They know me.
The name is out there.
Is out there. It's getting it out there, packaged and ready to go. Because they're not looking for, they already have their picks. I want to just give them something like, here, boom. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? They already have their favorites, like the tight jeans, young cat. Yeah, you know.
Tight jean comedians?
Yeah.
Not like, to be confused with weed comedians.
Yeah, But you know what I'm saying? But I think if you have something that's put together well and it's sellable, so be it. This is just my hopes to get this done. Just because the place I'm filming is the Bridges Auditorium in Claremont, California, which is literally 6 minutes from my house. And it's on the campuses of Claremont College. It's a beautiful theater. So it holds 2,000 people.
Wow.
So it's a big room, but it's a big, beautiful room. And I'm getting it for free, basically. So why not do it?
Right.
And then why not do it right?
It's about time. 20 years.
It's about time. And I'm shopping for different people to invest. That's just the whole thing. I don't know that aspect.
Right.
So hopefully.
Is there like somebody, like you mentioned Dave Attell a few times, is that a guy that's helped you or would help you, or do you even know him?
I know Jay Chappelle.
Dave Chappelle. Yeah, sorry.
I know I've met Attell too.
But who's the guy that, oh yeah, Chappelle's the one that bumped you for his thing.
Yeah, and that's right, Jericho. I like what you do, that lion tamer. I think in comedy, everybody's for themselves. Mm. They're not out to help the people that don't work under them.
Right, I gotcha.
You know what I'm saying? Again, why I left the management I had before, who was another comedian.
It was comedy, okay. Yeah.
I think it's outside investor. Because the majority, it's never, because if you really look at specials, it's never really the same executive producer. There's not a...
Yeah, it's not a factory of specials coming up.
And if they are, if it's Comedy Central or something like that, they own that special.
Yeah, they're paying for it.
They're buying that block, and they own you. So they can just pay you that once, and they can show it as many times as you want, I don't want that. I'm going to be adamant about it, and I think I'm worth, I want to own my special. I don't care about the money for the special or what have you, because I would probably sell it like 25 bucks a ticket. I just want the special done.
Yeah.
I just want it done. I want it out there. You want to produce the special, Chris? No. the owner of AEW. He's got, hey, you own the football team. You can produce the special. Like, I just want it out there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I want to leave a mark. I don't have kids. This is what I do. Mm-hmm. And I want to just leave a mark. Mm-hmm. And that... I don't think that's too much to ask.
It's a good final statement. The last question for you. Who's your favorite comedian of all time?
It can go Chappelle. I'd have to say Chappelle. Mm-hmm. Not just as a comedian, but as a human being. Like after the shooting in Ohio, he put together that festival and where he got Stevie Wonder and all these legends to work for free. Mm. Would Pryor have done that? Am I denouncing his greatness? No, I'm not denouncing his greatness, but I think they're two different places. Chappelle proves what raising a child in a two-parent household can do. compared to a bordello. Does it make any sense?
Right, sure, of course. But when you're talking about like black comedians, this is actually a good kind of final thing. Pryor, obviously huge influence.
Mm-hmm.
Eddie Murphy, huge influence. Mm-hmm. Dave Chappelle, huge influence. Mm-hmm. In a three-way dance, who's the most influential?
Who's Chappelle?
Chappelle? More than Eddie?
I think Eddie, because Eddie, it's two different. This you're talking two different time frames,
right? Yeah,
you know what I mean. Eddie was the rock star.
Yeah.
Of
great point.
You know what I mean.
And also his time on the street, so to speak, was very short.
Yeah.
Because by the time he was 22, he was
done. He's already superstar. Yeah. He was 20 when he did 48 Hours.
Right.
You know what I mean. Mm-hmm. He was 17 on SNL.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm sure you remember growing up watching that dude. Like,
everyone knew Eddie Murphy.
Everybody knew Gumby.
Yeah.
Everybody knew Mr. Robinson. Yeah. Like, and so when he came back and did SNL, which was the greatest, one of the greatest episodes of all time, it was a retake. Because people was like, oh, his body didn't do anything new. He didn't need to do anything new.
Yeah.
It was, yeah, so that body of work.
See him do anything new. They see him do his famous guy.
Yeah, and they want to see Gumby. You want to see Buckwheat. You want to see Velvet Jones.
exactly.
And that's what it is.
That cake skit was hilarious.
The baking thing.
The demonic cake.
Oh, no. The one I liked was the black elf. I've seen it.
Have you seen Dolomite?
Yes.
That's great. That's a classic Eddie Murphy. I'm wondering.
He did that for Charlie.
For his brother?
Yeah.
Charlie
was a huge fan of Dolomite because in the black community, everybody knew Dolomite because he was like the Master P of his time.
Yeah.
Like selling records out of the trunk
of his car.
Yeah. And everybody knew Dolomite. Way down in the jungle deep, badass lion stepped on the signified monkey feet. That was just in the black culture. So when Charlie died, which shocked the hell out of the comedy world, because I didn't know Charlie was sick.
Mm.
He kept it to himself.
Did he have cancer or something?
Yeah. And his wife had died 2 years before that.
Wow.
2-3 years before that of cancer.
Wow.
That was sad because I love Charlie because just, you know, because that's what he did, you know, right? That's right, Jingles. That's right, nigga. Hey, Jingles, I need some weed, nigga. That was him. You know, I got to do guest sets with him. Because I could get weed for him, because he'd fly in from New York. He couldn't fly in. At that time, he couldn't fly in with weed. And so the manager of the Improv would call me and say, Charlie Murphy needs weed. I go, really? And I would go get him. Yo, nigga, yeah, right. Depending on how good this weed is, depends on your set. So I would get like 40 to 25-minute sets when, that's good weed, nigga. And, you know, you establish relationships with people you look up to. That's what I tried to do,
mm-hmm.
is establish relationships with people I look up to and respect, and so they can respect me. Now it's time for the gatekeepers
to do the same for you.
Yeah.
Bruce, it was great having you on the cruise, and hopefully if we ask you to come on the third one, will you come?
Yes. Dude, you're going to have to retire my number.
You, Teddy, and by the way, Jeff said, tell him the tall midget says hi.
Yeah! I love that dude. And it's weird. Like I've established this relationship with people from your cruise, and we still communicate on social media. It's awesome.
And that's like you said, right from the start. Summer camp.
Yeah,
the camaraderie, and most of them will be back next year. So,
dude, and I can't wait, brother.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you. Much love, man.